Hello and welcome to 10 Lessons It Took 50 Years to Learn, your shortcut to success, where we dispense wisdom, not just information or mere facts, to an international audience of rising leaders. My name is Robert Hosrey and I'm your host. This podcast is sponsored by Professional Development Forum, which helps diverse young professionals of any age accelerate their performance in a modern workplace. On this podcast, you'll hear honest, practical advice that you cannot learn from a textbook. And why can't you learn from a textbook? Because it took 50 years to learn. Today's guest is Alan Kilfoyle. Alan has had 40 years in the corporate world and in private consulting. Alan is a qualified master coach and began Four Seasons consulting as a sole trader, largely specializing in career coaching and consulting. Along the way, Alan has also been an actor on stage and screen, skills he still uses in consulting and counseling. Welcome to the show, Alan.
Thank you, Rob. Very nice to be here.
So I suppose I should start by a disclosure to our audience that I've known Alan for close to 15 years, and Alan did help me through career coaching and counseling when I had an unfortunate event in my career, and I came back from overseas where I was running a successful IT company, and I came back to Australia and got a new position, but I didn't realize that you could mourn for a job, and I was doing that, and Alan helped me see that. So I just wanted to be open with everyone that I've known Alan, I've used his services, and if you're looking for someone, I highly recommend him. Alan, let's just start off with a question that we ask most of our guests. What was your first business lesson?
The first business lesson, Rob, I guess, is make sure that you become excellent at something. Become well known, become famous, set yourself up as the gold standard. That's your brand and it's invaluable.
And how did you learn that?
I learned it through bitter experience early on. This is particularly when I was setting myself up as my own business.
Yep.
That you had to have a point of differentiation. You know, you had to be something that people would seek, or you set a standard. When I was doing recruiting in very much a cowboy world, I strove for and I reached a standard where people would say, well, if Alan sends across a resume or recommends we see someone, we'll take notice and do it. And as I say, this was a cowboy world. That made me feel very good, and that was a point of my salesmanship, I guess.
So you would recommend to any listener now that whatever they do, whatever they specialize in, to be excellent at it.
Absolutely, and word travels very quickly either way. I remember being up in Darwin at one stage, and that's a very small world, and a chap said, "Yeah, we'll give you a go, and if you do well, you'll be famous next week. If you don't do well, it won't take that long."
Okay. I understand the point, and I understand how it would have affected you had you not been successful or excellent at what you do, because there's a lot of things that I did that I wasn't excellent at. But luckily, from my perspective, I wasn't, it didn't ruin me. But if I was better at it, I probably would have been even more successful.
More quickly, perhaps. The other thing about that as well, I learned at the same time, you've got to be agile too. Things do change. Keep an eye out for what's new, what's going to replace you, what else you need to know that you're adding into your quiver, or some, you know, you become redundant or unnecessary in a very short space of time. So part of your time has to be spent on that.
Yep. Well, let's go to the other side of that coin then. What is it that you have unlearned in all your time? So something that you fiercely believed in, and then you woke up one day and went, well, maybe not.
I found this the hardest thing of all, Rob. It's a difficult one. I've made so many mistakes along the way, so I'm not trying to pretend that I'm in any way perfect. But I don't know that I've personally changed an opinion vehemently on something. I do remember things as a young guy in my second job, 20 years old, going to an induction day at a government place, And the gentleman got up in front of all of us new guys and said, the very first thing you've got to learn is don't try and change anything. Imagine how that goes down today. I guess I learned very quickly also something that I did try. You can't please everybody, and you can't please everybody all the time. So you've got to know when to walk away from something.
Yeah, I can see that. It is a difficult question to ask because it means we have to confront ourselves. And sometimes, you know, with people like you and I, Alan, who have been very honest with each other from the start, there's not a lot of, well, at least in my experience, there's not a lot of things that I hold so vehemently, you know, rigid that I can't change. So, you know, in those instances, it's just a normal day. You're confronted with new information, new data, you change. I get it. All right, well, we've got you on because of your experience and your background. And so let's start with your list. The first thing you've given to us is keep open-minded.
Well, what makes me a consultant these days is my background and so many different aspects of it. And I've learned from all of it. It all added up to what I am now. It's like weaving a thread, you know. HR taught me documentation, taught me process. Recruiting was finding a niche, fighting in a very competitive market. General consulting, got to satisfy a customer's needs. Open to see what's happening. Always see things through the other person's eyes. That's a very hard thing to do sometimes. Yeah. You're so wrapped up in what you do and what you provide. Why can't the world see it? Might not be what they want at all. I went through this process in my own mind about a year ago, and I thought I've learned a lot from HR, et cetera, et cetera. And I realized later, and this might come out, that acting taught me so much. It taught me myself as a product. It taught me resilience, and it taught me the need to really carry through. So even lessons for being unemployed, you know, needed a targeting short-term strategy. How do I get through this? What else can I turn my hand to? Ah, God, I need another glass of wine. But being adaptable. I retrained as a gym instructor at that time, you know, and that could have been my new career.
So all this is based around keeping an open or being open-minded and not being locked into, oh, look, I'm a this or my degree is in that and I have to do this.
Exactly. And this comes through with seeing my clients, you know, my candidates, whatever they might be. And a lot of it comes through this in career development. Very often people think, I'm an accountant and I'm a rotten one and I want to be something else. What else can I do? You know, it's not worth going to work 9 to 5 doing that. But also opportunities arise.
Well, that takes you straight into your second point. Be open to opportunities. I don't mean to be flippant, but isn't that just common sense? Shouldn't we all be open to opportunity?
Well, that's true, but sometimes it can be very unexpected. I had an interesting time a few years ago in my time as a careers coach, right? I met a young Vietnamese woman, about 30 years old, and she was a very, very smart lady. She'd come over on a boat, you know, with the family. She was a refugee. She'd missed out on some of her education, so her business English wasn't all that good. Okay? So I helped her with that. I helped her with a resume. I helped her with her applying for government jobs, selection criteria, et cetera, et cetera. She was very, very grateful. She then spread the word throughout her community. Metaphorically speaking, Rob, on Monday morning, I had a line of Vietnamese ladies at the front door. You help Sue, you will help me. To the point that was about the March or April of the year. Later in that year, October, November, in the Career Development Association meeting, I was chatting with a couple of the guys there, and I said, you know, what's 70% of my business at the moment, I didn't know existed, you know. Mm. So it's being able to take advantage of that. It was thrust upon me, I guess. But
you were open to it.
Keep being open, yeah.
Yeah, I'm just trying to think back to my career, whether there was any time when I had to be open to opportunities. And I suppose when I came back from the US, I was looking for a senior position because that's where I was at. And I ended up taking contractual work simply because that's what was available. So it wasn't so much an opportunity, but it was more basically going back to your first point to keep open-minded And because I was open-minded, I opened up all those other opportunities for contract work, which then led me to the final position that I had a few years ago. And it taught me a lot more and skilled me up a lot more over the last decade to be able to now do what I'm doing. So I get that.
Yeah, you never know what's around the corner, Rob, and you've just got to, as I say, keep an open-minded, identify it and then decide, yeah, I'll jump on that one, you know.
You never know what's around the corner. So your next point is be culturally aware. Did you learn that from your previous anecdote that you just shared with us?
I've learned it from a few things. My wife is Malaysian Chinese, so I learned a lot from that.
Right.
Some of your people might not know, Melbourne's a very multicultural place as well.
Yep.
And I was walking through a prestige store with my brother-in-law, who's American, and he looked around and he said, gee, you know, if you weren't hiring Asian people to help here, you'd be out of business. That's right. And I had some interesting examples of that too. Being culturally aware will help you avoid making mistakes, putting your foot in it, faux pas, and it also gives you a huge advantage. I remember a time, again, as a consultant, dealing with a little lady who'd been made redundant. She was Chinese, probably about 40, and we were going through all the various things you need to do in the career change process, you know. And I sensed something was wrong. At the end of the session, she went to the door and I said, no, come on back. I'm not politically correct, as you know, Rob. So she's this tiny little woman up to about my chest. And I grabbed her hands, one with each hand, said, come on, tell me what's wrong. I'll never forget, because she gripped me like a wrestler. Her hands nearly crushed mine. And one tear came from her eye and she sucked it back up again. I don't know how. And she said to me, I am so ashamed. I have let everyone down. Oh, I get emotional thinking about it. It was loss of face, all that sort of thing. We'd been talking about networking and she was really had a barrier about doing something like that. And there were people pounding on the door trying to get into the interview room and I thought, just go away. And I had to give her that sort of lesson, I guess. But I, knowing where she was coming from, helped me in that.
Having worked in Taiwan, Alan, as you know, I understand the cultural peculiarities of Eastern business practices. And it's if you're not culturally aware, if you're not awake to it, you come across badly. And yeah, as you've just pointed out, you don't see, especially if you're in a senior position, you don't see what your, you know, what your attitude does to your employees, or you don't see the hurt that they have. And you and I know a lot of stories like this from people in call centers in India, not understanding the hierarchical structure that they need there. And so the boss sitting on the floor with all the workers just destroys that, and there's no respect there because that's the culture of that business environment. So I get what you're saying. And do you think that it's still that way today, especially in Australia? And you're right about Melbourne. Victoria, or Melbourne in particular, is the largest Greek population outside Athens,
right,
or outside Greece. So, yes, we are a very multicultural country in Australia, but especially in Melbourne. But back to the question, do you think that multicultural, that cultural awareness is being required more and more today?
I think we are getting to understand it a bit better. I think the basic natives, being us, have learned lessons over the last 20 years, last 15 years, and they are now aware that they need to know things like, do you offer to shake hands with a certain ethnic person? Is it okay or should you not? I do a lot of reverse training in this too with people, and they might be, you know, like the little lady Chinese or a chap from the Middle East who you've got to talk about maybe having a handshake, which we find acceptable, and it's totally foreign to him.
Yep.
I learned a lesson about with a young Middle Eastern boy with his parents, and I went to ruffle his head, you can't do that. And we would regard it as a bit of affection, and warming and welcoming, and it's totally wrong.
It is. So being culturally aware, I do get it. And you need in business, in life, in everything, as you said, you know, ruffling a little boy's hair, that wasn't business, that was life. And you don't do that. So understanding your surrounding, understanding the culture that of the people you're interacting with, I can see the importance of that.
Absolutely true.
You said something a little while ago, and which brings me to your fourth point. You said you were aware of yourself as a product. What do you mean by that?
Okay. This again comes back to something I learnt at acting, an acting school. And let me tell you, you need to be a product when you're acting. You know what you are, you know what you aren't. If you see yourself on screen, you spend half an hour thinking, running for the toilet, that's not me, oh my God, pulling out the handkerchief. And then you realize you are. I thought I might have been the next George Clooney, but no. I could be the next John Malkovich, perhaps. And you very quickly learn what you can do and what you can't do. You lose a few things when you do acting. You lose false bravado because you'll very quickly be found out. You claim to be something and you're not. And you lose false modesty. And people sometimes think, oh, well, Alan carries on a bit. But Alan's just really saying what he is. Yep. The old word of Popeye, I am what I am. Okay. And you need to know that. You need to promote that. And I talk about this with people who are my clientele. Have a summary of yourself, a professional summary, which you and I know very well, because people are looking for this snapshot. And what are you? Yeah, part of the same point perhaps is, what can you do and what can't you do? In business, there are three answers. Alan, can you do this? Answer A, sure I can. Piece of cake, I know that well. Answer B, I might need to bone up on this a bit or research it a bit, but yes, then I can. Okay. Answer C, no, I can't. But I know someone who can, which is still adding value. Because if you get a chance, people will come back to you if you've done something well, and they'll give you first crack at it. Yeah. I had an interesting time once. A lady came up to me after a business meeting and gave me a card and said, I'll be in touch with you. What they wanted was that they were a group of very professional young women who were dealing with some displaced older males and trying to relocate them into a different industry. They were smart and savvy enough to realize that they wanted an old, ugly man like me to talk to old, ugly men like them. So we did that, and that worked very well. So probably 6 months after that, she contacted me again and said, we want to do a presentation down at the Geelong Football Club, actually. Could you do that? And she didn't know that I could do presentations or whatever, but I got the first crack. So the answer was, yes, I could. And then there is C, and you mustn't bite off more than you can chew. Does that answer the question? Know yourself as a product. What you are doesn't mean that's static, because you're always growing. But know what you can do, what you might be able to do, and what you can't do.
It absolutely answers the question. And also, if you take that metaphor a little further, products evolve. And if you know yourself as a product, you know your unique selling proposition, to use sales speak. You know the features and benefits that you can offer. So yeah, I do get it. But I'm intrigued, and I love the fact that of the point you're making from an acting perspective, it removes the false modesty. It removes the bravado. Because, as you know, I have dabbled in that as well. I'm not a professional like you, but I've done a few little things, and you're absolutely right. I remember that feeling of just being who you are. I still am. So what you're really saying with this is, be authentic.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And be prepared to be able to talk to it.
Yep.
And prepared to back it up. You know. So now you're saying something, and then you can't say, well, what you are. You've got to show that. You know? Don't just tell them, show them.
Yeah. Very true. All right, let's move on. Your point number five, resilience.
Ah, right. Again, learned from acting in a lot of ways. Daniel Craig, who you may have heard of, very famous.
Slightly, yes, yes.
we all know how successful Daniel is. And he said, I think 95% of acting is knockbacks. And that's quite true. So one of the things that you learn in in acting and goes through to other areas of my life, is being able to take a knockback, take it on the chin, learn from it, and maybe come back from it. I had an interesting time when I auditioned for an ad, and the ad was to do with an awareness campaign amongst Jewish community for a thing called Tay Sachs, which affects Eastern European Jewish people. Don't know why, but it's in the genes somewhere. And we did a really good sketch. I played a husband, there was a wife. We did our stuff. We did it very well, I might say. Did I get the gig? No, I don't look Jewish enough.
Well, it is the only industry left that where you can discriminate on looks. You know that.
Exactly right. But again, I tell people, and in my own business, you know, if you get a knockback, take it graciously, try and learn from it. Don't take it to heart. The sun comes up tomorrow morning. And also don't take a knockback as that's the end of the story. Very often you might have been beaten by somebody else or another organization to a contract, to a role. Okay. Yeah. Come back to them 4 months later. How's it going? You know? Oh, well, funnily enough, the other people promised the world, but they haven't delivered. Are you still available? This happens more often than you think.
I've been there, and I agree with you. The interesting thing about resilience and what you're talking about is too many people don't understand what you've just said, which is, again, to paraphrase you, don't take it personally.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. I had a candidate once, this was a lady probably in her 50s, and she'd been, she was getting sick of being knocked back. Okay. So she got a bit of, she going for job after job and not getting it. So eventually one of the agencies gave her some feedback, which she really disagreed with. And she came back to me and said, boy, I told him, I really showed him, you know, I didn't agree with that. And I said, you did what? You know, for a start, what chance has she got of getting anything from that guy again?
Yep.
It's just nonsense. And who knows, you know, as we said, things can change. A month later, she could have been re-offered something. But you know, you just got to get up in the morning and no matter how well you market yourself or how good you are, you're going to get a big percentage of no thanks. It's all right.
You're saying something, Alan, that again resonates. I know full well that you, within your career, have had a bout of unemployment. You've been in a situation where you've not had a job. I also have been in a situation like that. And unless you adopt a different mindset, you are jeopardizing your mental health if you take the knockbacks personally, if you don't learn from what you're doing, if you're not following some of these things that you're actually saying now. That does affect your mental health.
Yeah, exactly right. You get down into a little a spiral, and curl up in a ball.
Yep.
And the world doesn't want to see that. Doesn't matter what's happened to you. You've just got to be strong and bust out of it. Things will break open.
They will. They absolutely will. I don't know about you, but I kept all my rejection emails and letters, and they amounted to over 300.
Wow.
So who cares?
You could use them for wallpaper.
They're all emails, my friend. But, but yeah, you know, does that mean that I as a person am not worth it? No, absolutely not. It just means I didn't find the right opportunity.
Yep,
and I didn't
correct.
Take it personally. And that's lessons I learned from Alan Kilfoyle a long time ago.
There we go. What goes around, mate.
Yep. All right. We both agree on that. Let's move on to your next point. Point number six, which is, again, something that's from your acting background.
Yep.
And I'm curious to see how you're going to make this relevant. The show must go on.
Okay. Again, as you say, from acting, this was from acting class. And we had a presentation night after end of semester. The particular gentleman who was in charge of this, fellow named Peter Sardi, is very strong on acting, not so much in groups, but one-on-one. Okay. Now, a fellow came in to do this presentation and he lost it. He cracked up. I can't do it. I can't go on. Which left his opposite number, a young woman, with no show. Nothing to do. She very generously and very kindly asked if I could fill in. which I did, and it was successful, and that was great. But Peter really paid out on the guy who didn't follow through. He had a very good saying, and I think it's very true in the acting world, but also it has relevance throughout all of your working life. He used to say, I don't care if your wife's run off with your best friend, your dog's been shot, whatever, all those troubles, you treat them like a hat and coat, and you put them on the hat stand as you come in, and that could be coming into work, and you pick it up again if you want to on the way out, but the show must go on. People are depending on you. It could be your team, it can be your customers. They need you, and you take strength from that. You perform while you need to, on show or in business, and then you can put your tail between your legs on the way out and take your troubles home.
I'm going to take issue with you on this. And I have actually been in a theatre watching a musical where one of the lead roles just lost it. Now, I don't know what this actor's issue was, whether he had a breakdown of some sort, but basically came out during a critical climactic scene, told us what was going to happen, said he can't do it, and walked off stage. The musical director then got up and, with a script in hand, finished the show. So I understand from your theatrical perspective what that means and why. But in life today, if you don't confront issues like personal problems and those heavy personal issues that afflict all of us from time to time, that is going to affect you in the long run. And so just to pretend for the time being, for a small period, that it doesn't, that the show must go on, so I've got to forget about, my mother being in hospital and I have to do this, I'm not sure how I feel about that, Alan.
There's an old saying, in your own time, son. I'm not trying to put your viewpoint down. I hear what you're saying. There's a couple of points on that. When you're on show, in the broadest sense, you must be on show, in my view. I agree with Peter. But that doesn't mean that that your problems go away. You address them again when you walk out the door. And in fact, if you don't address them, you're going to go into that spiral that you mentioned before. So it must be done. There was another thing which might be relevant here. I don't know if you know, but I do some singing as well. And I'd come to my singing coach one time and said, my girlfriend at the time has left me, was, really, really sad, etc. And he grabbed me by the ears and said, you put that into your performance.
Yeah.
You go, off you go, boom, that's part of it. Now, it's easier to do if you're singing a blues ballad on stage instead of having a meeting with the BHP board. But I think there's some value in that too.
Okay. I hear you. I'm not disagreeing with you, but I don't know if I'm fully on board, even though I must be absolutely transparent. I do actually practice what you've just said, but I'm also here as an advocate for the listener. So,
yeah.
Okay. So let's go on to your point number 7. Be on top of everything, but don't micromanage.
That's right.
How do you do that, Alan?
This is a learned thing, and I've learned it from a bit of business experience. It's almost like doublethink out of 1984.
Okay.
You can't micromanage people because you will lose your best people. I think you know, and I'm sure that the really good creative minds that you want around you, if you micromanage them, you might as well say that they're going to go within 3 months or 6 months. You've got to understand what they're doing, but you've got to give them your head. But you've got to keep a big overview, I think, of what is happening, be it in a project, et cetera, et cetera. At one stage, I must admit, I got lazy. I didn't keep an overview of the business that I was running, and I really paid the price. Got into some real trouble. Costly mistakes were being made, and I was unaware of it, and it reflected very badly on me. So when I got back again in my new business, right, I put in place clear measurables, what needed to be achieved, and meeting with the people with me. I didn't care how they went about it, as long as they met those achievables, KPIs. And if they were having trouble, they knew to come and see me, et cetera, et cetera. But I wasn't going to tell them how to suck eggs. as long as the eggs were well soaked, that was fine.
Nice saying. No, I hear you. I knew a colleague who had a printing company many, many years ago, doing incredibly well, had some very large contracts, people like Microsoft and HP and all the end user license agreements. So you can imagine when they actually sold software, when this stuff went in boxes. And they were doing very well, but he left all of the accounting side of the business to an accountant and didn't keep an eye on what was happening because he wasn't an accountant. That's not the point you're making. Yeah. Keep an eye on everything. You don't have to be a bookkeeper. You don't have to balance your accounts, but you have to know what the hell's happening with your money.
That's right.
In this particular instance.
Yeah, you have to know what you need to know. And that's business savvy.
Yep.
Some of it can be learnt. Some of it can be learnt by study. Some of it can be learnt by being a very good 2IC somewhere first and learning the business and seeing how that business works and how it does.
All right. Let's move on to your eighth point, which resonates with me quite a bit for many different reasons, but you can recover.
Yes, I think we've both been through this, and I certainly was. My business went down, I was unemployed. I didn't know what to do, but I couldn't just sit there twiddling my thumbs. And I trained as a gym instructor, and that was doing quite well. Hmm. I got some work doing that and got associated with a gym. The money at that stage wasn't that great. And then out of the blue, completely out of the blue, came an opportunity to rejoin the consulting industry. Someone took a chance on me, and I'll forever be grateful to her. And she said, we want someone 3 days a week to come in and do some business development, crack open some doors for us. And I think you can probably do that. I said, sure. So I started. And 2 days later, she said, can you go full time? We didn't expect to have someone with your experience join us. It was very pleasing. But I was back in the game.
Yeah.
And it was funny because I was contacting some of the people that I'd been dealing with before. And it was, mate, you know, where have you been? Welcome back. Can you get me such and such? Can you do so and so? So my sins were forgiven and my skills and experience welcome back. And the rest is sort of like history. I recovered very quickly. But it was being open to a chance, I suppose.
It was, but it's proof of the lesson that you learned that, you know, just because you're down, you're not out.
Yeah.
You can get back up. You can recover. And sometimes you need a hand, sometimes you don't. You just need a good set of ears and eyes to seek out that opportunity.
Yeah, exactly right. And it was interesting how quickly that I was re-recognized in the industry. Some people that had thought I'd done the wrong thing by them, and I hadn't, but they'd taken things the wrong way. They'd moved on. They were out.
Let's add that to your lesson, because I think that's an important point, that you can recover. And if your downfall or if you're out of it because of a grudge or because someone has come in and put a broom through the place and gotten rid of you, that's all well and good. You will recover. You will survive. And it doesn't matter what those people do or who they are or how long they're there, because you've moved on. And if you attach yourself to that loss for too long and start looking and saying, oh, they can't do it as well as I did, or I was better, or you build up this bad personality, this bad grudge, and it just doesn't leave you open to move on. It doesn't leave your mind open to understand that you have recovered and you have moved on.
Exactly. I think you're perfectly correct. Something like that happens to you, you must have a look at yourself. Well, what have I done wrong? What's through their eyes? Have they seen where have I let them down or where have I let myself down? And a bit of reevaluation. And then, you know, pull yourself together. Okay, I've learned that, but that doesn't diminish me as a person. On we go.
That's the important part. Now, I'm with you there. That is the real important part. Okay, lesson number 9. Now, this is something that is a well duh moment for me, but I'm sure that you have a good anecdote to explain how what this means to you. You talk about teamwork as being a very important lesson.
Brought home to me in a theatre group that I was in, mm-hmm. and you and I both know that if anyone wants to learn about teamwork, they joined a theatre company. We were doing a show called The Threepenny Opera, which is a farce. And one of the things that I played three roles in that. And I had to bring something on stage, which was a massive, massive painting. And we had to, as a gift for somebody. And somebody had taken this thing, which was far too big for the stage. And I thought, oh, gee, it had to be done at pace while we were singing and performing. And twice it crashed over during rehearsals. Mm-hmm. I thought, this is not going to go well. Anyway, we're doing the main act, and there the thing's sitting there rock solid. And I'm singing and dancing and carrying on. I look behind me, and there's three little girls from the cast holding it up with one finger each with cute little smiles. So teamwork. And there was a cast member who was selling tickets and just about killing herself with tiredness, but you wouldn't know it when she was on stage. There was a marketing company that I worked for. It was my first introduction to any sort of technology. This organization was working flat chat, mm-hmm. I'd say 100% all day, every day. There was about 100 people in it, very, very big group. And yet none of them were too busy to teach me. And I'd like to think that I repaid them in spades in what I did. When I got my business started up again, I built this into my business. I'd seen in the past recruitment consultancies where particular agents had got very jealous about different CVs, etc., and kept them to themselves. So I didn't want that to happen. So I built in a reward system where it was a split fee, depending, you know, if you had the job and he had the person. And it worked very well, a shared reward system. People actually took pleasure out of somebody else getting a placement.
Isn't that wonderful?
You know, the teamwork there was phenomenal. And we worked quite a few times on tenders, worked back till 10 o'clock at night, sometimes all nighter. And it was done with a smile on the face. And we built this team ethos, team success.
It's interesting, Alan, because you and I have both worked in organisations where they profess teamwork, and yet there's always one or two that will keep information to themselves.
Yes.
And that comes from an insecurity in their job as opposed to wanting to be part of a team. It's not wanting to lose their job, not wanting to lose their importance, but they don't realise that by doing that, they are less important to the organisation.
Quite correct. Quite correct. Somebody said recently, try and make yourself dispensable.
Oh, you must have listened to a podcast that we just finished recording.
In fact, that's what it was. So therefore, it's gone into my brain and will stay with me. No, I quite agree with that.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, I've believed that for a long time. So if you want to make yourself indispensable, make yourself dispensable. Be part of the team. Grow. Do exactly what you've just said. Don't hoard things to yourself. Share them. Share your knowledge. Share your experience. Bring people along the journey with you. Make other people successful. And, you know, that's also the sign of a good leader.
Well, that's true. Yeah, it really was an interesting dynamic, the way it happened, because we found that the group then grew, you know. We were getting more business in. People were seeing opportunities. They took it upon themselves to put their antenna up rather than just doing their job. They thought, oh, this could work for Freddie across the road. Let's jump in there, or get Freddie to jump in there. And it was really quite amazing. I mean, it sounds like a bit airy-fairy, but it's not at all.
No, it's definitely not. And let's just go back to your theatrical anecdote there. Those three cast members who are holding up this prop, if they weren't there, everyone on that stage, including them who may or may not have been on stage at that time, would look foolish.
Yep.
They would lose. By having them there, they might have felt uncomfortable, but everyone looked good and the gag worked.
Mm. Yeah, sensational. It was just a wonderful feeling. You know, you embraced them for that.
Yeah, and the anecdote, the lesson is very well put and very easily transferable to life and to business. So thank you for that, Alan. Okay, well, believe it or not, Alan, we've come full circle to the very last one. This is your point number 10. Listen, learn, live up to. Now, this isn't a take on eat, pray, love, is it?
Eat, drink, be merry.
Maybe that one. What do you mean by listen, learn, live up to?
Things that happened to me in my life, in my business life. At one stage, when I was parting company with an organization, they couldn't afford me. And I was talking with a chap that I was trying to grow business with. And I said to him, why would your company want to hire me? You know, like, what could I possibly do for your organization? And he misheard me, I'm sure, because he answered what the question as if it was, what do you think of me? And he proceeded to tell me. And it was quite flattering. And I just shut up. And I thought quietly as I walked out the door, by God, I better start living up to that. And in fact, that gentleman is the reason that I started my own consultancy. And I've told him that. There was another instance back in the marketing company with my boss. And she said something to me. There was a real conflab on. It looked like pressure was going to get the best of people. And she turned to me and said, Alan, make it happen, you know, like you do. And I thought, do I? Okay, again, I better live up to that. I better go on for that. And the third one, I was given a great deal of free rein, I think, when a gentleman asked me to join in with his venture. And he is very well known in the industry, and I do have a lot of time for him. And he said, this is the way it's done around here. If you want to throw it out the window, go for your life. I'm bringing you on because of who you are, not because of our system. And I thought that was absolutely valuable. So that was listen, learn, and take it forward, you know.
What advice then would you have with that lesson for our listeners who are upcoming in their career, or, you know, maybe listeners like my age who are established? How do we then take the essence of that away and do something with it?
I think you've got to do a little bit of detective work, and it's not something you do every day. It's a bit of market research about yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Ask somebody, what do you think my strengths are? What are my weaknesses? Or where might I fit this particular project that's upcoming? What value could I add? What would I need to learn to be valuable? And take it on board. We were talking about taking things on board before. You take the good as well as the as not so good, and learn from it and think, gee, maybe there's an embryo of ability there, or something I could build on, something I could make valuable to people. Every now and then it's worthwhile, I think. And it doesn't matter what age you are.
So if we go back to you are a product,
yep.
And I don't want to use the term brand, but if we look at you as your product, as your brand, a brand is a promise to the people buying. And if I'm understanding your point, do the market research, listen to what people think about your brand, because that's the promise that you have made to them, subconsciously sometimes, because of who you are, and live up to that promise.
Yes, absolutely. And also learn from it. If you're looking for feedback, and you should be, sometimes people just give you feedback anyway. And they say,
whether you want it?
Yeah, that's right. But this was particularly valuable because, now, it might not have been something you even thought of or set out to do, but someone said to me, that was amazing because of.
Mm.
So really, that maybe I should include that in what I do as part of the course, or at least, you know, live up to it. It's something I didn't know, or it's something I just touched on, and this could become part of your core offering.
That's very deep, Alan. That will take a little, that'll take a few listens for our listeners to understand. And I advise, if you're listening to this, play it again and listen to this point again, because it's not as shallow as you may first think it is. It's a very deep point you're making, and there's a lot to unpack. I like it. I listen, learn, live up to. It's the live up to that is the deepest part of this.
That's right.
Listen and learn. You know how to do that. How do you live up to it? So, no, Alan, that's very good. So we've come to the end of our session together. I would like to say thank you. Thank you for joining us today. Thank you for sharing the lessons that took you 50 years to learn with all of us. We really appreciate it. You've been listening to the international podcast of 10 Lessons It Took Me 50 Years to Learn with our guest, Alan Kilfoyle. This episode is sponsored by Professional Development Forum. PDF provides webinars, social media discussions, podcasts, parties, and much more. and you can find them on their website, professionaldevelopmentforum.org. And the best part about it is it's all free. So with that, I will say thank you, and we look forward to you tuning in to our next episode of 10 Lessons It Took 50 Years to Learn.